You're listening to Future Ready Through M&A. I'm your host, Scott Slater, Vice President of Practice Management and Consulting at Fidelity Investments. We're about to kick off the episode. But before we do, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or visit go.fidelity.com/mergers and acquisitions to listen to more episodes and to get the latest M&A insights. Since the start of the COVID pandemic in March 2020, we have seen an unbelievable amount of change and activity in the independent wealth management space. In retrospect, the early COVID-driven slowdown in activity from March to May of 2020 was merely a blip, as acquisitions roared back by June and accelerated through the end of 2020 to set yet another annual record. We're on track for yet another record. Through November 2021, RIAs have completed or announced 182 deals above $100 million in client assets under management, and that represents 61% more than the same November year-to-date period of 2020, and a whopping $304 billion in assets under management. And that's almost 80% above year-to-date November 2020. 75 of these 182 firms are a billion or more, which compares to about 42 firms for all of 2020. So activity is booming, driven by plenty of well-capitalized, often PE-backed, experienced buyers in what continues to be a low interest rate environment. Motivated sellers who recognize their need for ownership succession and better platforms and the benefits of scale, all with the intent of delivering better client solutions and experiences. Okay, so lots of M&A, lots of headlines, and big name sales every day. What does it all mean for the future of our industry, one that was founded on the idea of independent advice and entrepreneurship, all with the intention of offering better solutions for clients, better investment management, better planning, and better guidance? And more to the point, what does today's heightened M&A activity mean for clients? Will they receive better advice, more access to complex planning, better advisory talent through these larger enterprises? One of the last episodes of the second season discussed just what do we mean by scale in this industry, one that is not capital intensive like, say, heavy industry, such as a manufacturer or an airline, and is instead focused on motivated professional services employees with superior relationship skills. And the main point of my guests on that episode, who were Michael Nathanson and Ron Rubin of the Colony Group, was that scale enables increased functional specialization, in other words, better capabilities that you can bring to clients, and allows advisors to concentrate on their client and prospect relationships. Our guest today is David Cantor, head of the RIA and Family Office segment for Fidelity Institutional, and we'll get his thoughts on whether all of this M&A activity will lead to a better outcome for the end client. But before we do that, I want to encourage you to listen to previous episodes of our Future Ready Through M&A series to better understand the perspectives of key leaders who are building these large enterprises. We have sought to help our listeners look at M&A not as a strategy by itself, but rather as a means to an end, to understand just why someone does a deal beyond the money and the mechanics. From these, and from our Fidelity M&A Leaders Forum, a forum we began in 2015 and comprised of many of our industry's leading strategic acquirers, we have learned six key lessons to success, whether you see yourself today as a buyer or a seller. Let's run through these for a moment. First, M&A does require resources, capital, management time, and most of all, leadership. It's not something you can do, as I often say, at 3:30 on Friday afternoon after all the other work is done, as a sideline, in other words, because it takes significant time to source, structure, execute, and most of all, integrate deals to create a better business, a better enterprise. A lot of our episodes explore what individual firms are building and why. And I encourage you to listen to a season one program on deal mechanics and requirements for success to learn more about that with Liz Nesvold of Raymond James Investment Banking. Second, scaled platforms, large multi-billion AUM firms, are receiving much larger EBITDA or profit multiples for reasons that are probably obvious. But the differential continues to expand between small firms and these large enterprises that have a broader footprint. Third, for a long time, sellers were not well educated on M&A, and strategic acquirers were largely well prepared, a reason in part that we started this podcast to help close that gap. Today, with all of the activity and resources, such as what Fidelity provides, advisors are much more educated and getting better prepared. For those of you who are still considering what your strategy is, a good place to start is with Fidelity's Control Your Destiny. It'll help a firm figure out whether you are a buyer or a seller, what your timing is, what resources you need to be successful, and the trade-offs of each of those strategic options. Fourth, and perhaps most important, and really a significant part of our topic today, is the culture of a combined enterprise. We talk about that a lot in our industry. What I refer to here as alignment of interest between the buyer and the seller. Firms on both sides of a transaction need to be intentional to achieve this aligned outcome, and both sides need to understand that there are trade-offs. For example, sellers need to recognize that they don't get it all, even though it is a seller's market. This is a key part of preparation. So it all goes back to your why. Why are you pursuing a transaction? Fifth, many acquirers regard M&A as a talent acquisition strategy to bring on top advisor and leadership talent in an environment of scarce advisors. Listen to our podcast with Jack Peterson of Summit Trail and Cheryl Penny of Dynasty on this topic. And finally, post-deal integration is critical to creating a high-performance, focused enterprise as firms get larger. To get value out of a transaction, a buyer needs to deliver a consistent client experience and motivate top talent that may have enjoyed independence and autonomy. Our podcast with Mercer Advisors CEO Dave Welling discusses this important subject and gives you a number of practical ideas. Again, this is an industry that is still growing and growing very rapidly. In fact, there are more RIAs today than there were 2 years ago. Many believe that despite the M&A headlines, we're just getting started. So how might you leverage M&A and the reshaping of our still evolving independent industry to deliver better results for your clients? To help answer that question, let's go to our conversation with David Cantor to learn more. So David, we've seen M&A accelerate since we began the M&A Leaders Forum 6 years ago. So what are your observations as approaching the year end of 2021 on what you're seeing with this year's activity?
Wow, it's hard to believe that it's been 6 years since that forum and all the great work that you've done, Scott, has passed us. A few observations that I would share with you and the audience. One, it's what goes beyond the balance sheet, and I'll talk about what that means. Two, as we enter this phase, which I don't see letting up, meaning this super cycle of M&A activity, what are some of the things that we should look at more closely as emerging trends? And I've got some ideas about it. And third, this is such a hot part of the marketplace. I think the only thing that's hotter than wealth management M&A is probably the crypto and the blockchain market. And maybe we'll talk about that a little bit too. But beyond the balance sheet, what are some of those cultural factors? And you talk about this a lot. And I think that plays more and more because as you look at these combinations, it's one thing to make sense from an economic and a financial perspective, but culture and advisor retention is so important. And as I think you know, in our business, we see the underbelly, if you will, of M&A is just advisor movement. So you have to make sure that you have the right incentives, the right culture, the right operating model for when these advisors, advisory teams are coming together. And second, what I think is going to be important, and we can talk about this more, is just a renewed and laser focus on the end investor, the client that underlies all of this. Are they getting what they want out of these transactions? And then finally, you know, I think we should talk about just how hot this market is and some of the parallels to what's going on in digital assets and the blockchain and exponential technologies in general, because this is certainly where institutional investors are sort of following the crowd, if you would.
From an Inside Track panel that I led this fall with Marty Bicknell and Jeff Concepcion and John Copeland, I asked them what inning do they think we're in? And for the most part, they said, we're in the early innings. This is not the typical industry consolidation that we've seen in so many other spaces because there's so many new entrants that are still coming into the space. And as I think John Copeland said, it's not only the early innings, the national anthem hasn't even finished playing. What's your perspective on where you think we are today in terms of our consolidation or concentration in the RIA space?
I try not to think of it in terms of innings or acts if we're looking at a play, or scenes if it's a movie, or chapters if it's a book. I think of it as the continuum of what investors are looking for. And you're right, there are new firms that are being minted every year. The RIA channel is one of the few financial services channels that continues to get new registrants year after year. I think it's a 3% or so growth, according to the Investment Advisor Association's work that they do. They put out a really nice report. I think it's now called the Industry Snapshot. It used to be the Evolution Revolution Report. So there's growth in the channel. There's certainly a bull market for advice. We see that in our studies, that investors want advice. And there's some degree of industrial logic in terms of business combination. So I don't know if I would, I resist, Scott, the urge to classify things in terms of innings or chapters, but just more the organic, rhythm, if you will, of the business. Now, one thing that I think is heightening the activity is the amount of capital that's chasing the profession, because outside institutional capital sees this as very steady and cash flow rich. And then the other thing is just uncertainty is what taxes may, how taxes may evolve for some of these firm founders that have some long-term capital gains.
Great. Well, let's discuss some of these emerging business models that you touched on. I mean, one of the things that I know you've talked about is there are still some creative and really disruptive models. I mentioned that there are a number of firms, about 13 or so that we've identified, that are driving the vast majority of M&A, but frankly, they're really different models, and some of them have just emerged in the last couple of years. What do you see, as you see these emerging? And I would also say, David, touch on the topic you've stressed a lot, which is this massive growth in the RIA ecosystem that enables a lot of this independence and different models. So what are some of the different models you see out there today, and where do you think this is going in terms of some of the emphasis?
I really break it down into two main categories, and beyond those, we can actually go deeper, but there's convergence in those two main categories. One is financial enablement, just the provision by a partner of capital to help a firm achieve its goals, whether it's ownership transition among the firm or, growth capital. And probably, that sort of side of the spectrum, if you will, might not exercise or want to demand too much operational control. But on the other side, and where I think the trend is moving in various shapes and sizes, is the construct of a true RIA or wealth management platform. And you've seen me talk about this before, where it's a whole set of services that are designed to provide great outcomes and solutions for investors and clients, but are also built to provide more leverage to advisors. And this notion of the construction of a true RIA or wealth management platform is where I see really all the larger firms, probably these 13 that you've talked about, really rush toward.
One of the challenges with that is I think what's built this industry, I'd love your reaction to this, what's built this industry over the last 30 plus years is this desire to do a better job for clients, to break away, to become independent. And then I think a lot of advisors really have appreciated the autonomy and independence. Then when they join a larger enterprise, and now you're getting to this, I think as you referred to it, the siren song of scale, that's been a real focus the last few years. In fact, I did a great podcast interview with the Colony Group's Michael Nathanson and Ron Rubin 2 years ago, where we talked about what does scale mean in an industry like ours, which is a professional services environment. So how do you see that tension between autonomy and independence of this entrepreneurial advisor with these ever larger firms and trying to achieve the benefits of scale? And what do we mean by scale? How do you see that?
Well, let me take the independence question and M&A. I think we're seeing what I call back to the future, meaning a lot of these smaller independent firms that have become bigger are now combining together. So it is, in a way, folks are returning to from whence they came if they worked at a wirehouse or a large institution. And instead of going back to a large institution, we're seeing these regional, you know, mid-sized providers. I've said this before, you've said this, it's a lot what happened in the accounting profession and in the legal profession where smaller providers banded together. And that's how you got these, large regional firms and perhaps national firms. And I think we're seeing that today in the RIA profession. You can still do well as a small provider, but if you want scale to help grow and provide leverage, that's where you see firms banding together. I do think scale is a siren song, though, because in my mind, scale is really provides an individual advisor or an advisory team the ability to serve an almost unlimited number of clients. And that really takes true digital or technology solutions, none of which I've seen really exist today. If you want the true sort of platform of wealth management, which includes planning, which includes perhaps taxes, perhaps estate planning advice, charitable advice, the only thing you could perhaps do at scale is a investment management solution that you saw some of the early digital providers do. So we can talk more about that. I mean, we're talking right now to a firm that is starting de novo, that's focused on a particular vertical, you know, think professional services clients or clients that work in a particular.
So a niche, a clear niche.
Clear niche, but yeah, they want to do everything for that niche. And, you know, doing everything is hard to scale.
Well, and frankly, it's one thing to put the platform together. It's kind of this balance of what you just talked about. It's like we're creating the RIA platform, but how do firms effectively enable those advisors to take advantage of that, to know how to do that so that there actually is a better outcome for clients? It does seem like that's a real challenge. Are you seeing firms that are able to execute on that?
I think that absolutely we're seeing firms that are able to execute. They really combine some of the key tenets of what investors are looking for help with planning, looking for help with, thinking about their estate, looking for help clearly on their investments, but really in the one-stop shopping. So firms that have been able to kind of have what I call the holy trinity of services, legal, tax, and investments that all are kind of reside within a planning wrapper, those firms are doing quite well and growing quite fast. But let me come back to the client and the advisor for a second,
please.
Scott.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the next phase of some of this M&A is some of these 13 providers and perhaps others are going to want to differentiate themselves in the market by being very vocal that the reason you want to work with them, the reason you want to combine with them is that they're client and client net promoter scores are higher once a combination has occurred. And also importantly, that their advisor or their associate promoter scores. So I do believe when we talk about beyond the balance sheet, the next phase is firms differentiating not just about the platform and services or the opportunity of scale or even the financial mechanisms, but satisfaction. And so employee promoter scores, client net promoter scores are probably the best indication out there that firms can use as proof points. So I think that's a trend that we might want to look for. And Scott, I'm dying to have you ask me about some of the cool and interesting things I'm seeing in the profession that we should look toward as we're moving forward, because I think that will have, again, a role in differentiation. I'm dying for you to ask me.
Well, then why don't you continue? Go for it, David.
Yeah. I mean, so it is, as you noted earlier, the end of 2021 as we move into the next year. And there are five cool things that I think are happening in the profession that if you're an M&A actor, if you will, or wherever you sit in the profession, you should pay attention to. And the first one I would say is theme-based or direct investing. What amazes me is how many of our clients are working with partners to create theme-based indices or theme-based investments that I think are really interesting. I won't share the specifics because some of them haven't launched, but you know, a great example years ago, our good friend Rick Edelman partnered with an asset management firm to create an exponential technologies ETF. So things like that, I'm seeing more and more of those. Number two, and I told you I would talk about crypto because it is hot, the opportunity not necessarily to allocate in digital assets on behalf of your investors, but what a great practice management opportunity for advisors. Because you know that your investors, your clients are working in that sphere, but not with you. So get educated. Getting educated is so important. Number three, and this applies to M&A so much, and it applies to planning around M&A. You know, Scott, I think you're aware that we're seeing a centenarian boom go on in the country right now. What an interesting implication for all of us in our society, but let alone the wealth management profession. Another thing that I think we all need to pay a lot of attention to is non-correlated investing, things like alternatives. And as you know, that's a big priority across the profession and at our firm as well. So how will that manifest? And I guess one more item that I think is something that advisors need to pay attention to is you need a next generation investor strategy. Few firms that I talk to really have a concerted strategy against that today. As I think you know, millennials, the oldest millennials are approximately age 40 right now. And we're already seeing the oldest Gen Z investors are at age 24. So it's time to get cracking. And as I like to say, if you don't know where you're going, you might end up someplace else.
You know, David, those are some great themes. So bring that back to how scale and M&A are able to execute on several of those and how that is enabling it. Because it does seem that you have to be really intentional as an enterprise to be able to deliver on those.
I think let me pick one because it's easier to break it down if I just pick one. Mm-hmm. Next generation investors, whether it's millennials or Gen Z, do you have a strategy? And that strategy can be expressed by how you leverage the wealth management platform that you've constructed. So maybe it's around a specific planning and investment solution that's tailored for those emerging investors. Or maybe it's just what I said, combined with segmenting your advisors, which is something that Mariner does so well. Sure, they segment their clients, but they segment their advisors. What I mean by that is your more sophisticated and experienced and tenured advisors probably are going to be better at dealing with the more complex cases, where if you have a more junior advisor, they may be more equipped to deal with emerging investors whose needs aren't so complex at the outset.
You know what? You know, let me build on that too, because one of the themes that I've heard from a number of acquirers is that the main reason they have even been pursuing M&A over the last few years is because they're trying to acquire and retain talent, advisor talent, and certainly professional talent as they get bigger. I know one of the themes you've mentioned too is that, you know, there really is a scarcity of advisor talent and even how we develop them. Could you just comment on that a little and how you see M&A driving some of that attention towards that limited pool of advisors?
It's interesting. I'll quote a CEO who I heard say this recently. There's a war for talent out there. And in case you haven't heard, the war's over and the talent won. So this is as much about talent as it is about growth, because you need talented advisors to serve clients and to grow. So I guess that's one way I would describe it. However, I guess, Scott, you know, I know of a firm that we work with, and I know I'm not directly answering your question, but I think this is thematic, that does such a great job of growing their business organically. They have their own podcast. It's actually called Animal Spirits. I shared it. You know, one of their principals, founders is predominant on TV. They view their clients as not just clients and promoters, but fans. And they have no problem growing their business. They just need advisors and they want to train them in their way and their culture. So it goes back to what I was saying. And if we had to put a tagline on this discussion, I would say going forward, think about those three letters, net promoter score or associate promoter score or employee promoter score. I think that is perhaps the next subtitle of the chapter of this story.
Sure. And it really is about who are the constituents you're serving?
And Scott, it goes back to the fact that this is a people business.
So how is this actually leading to better outcomes at this point as we see M&A driving better outcomes for these clients? What are you seeing out there?
You know, I think, again, that's what we need to see more proof points of. And better outcomes, I think, are defined across many spectra. So, for example, is a better outcome peace of mind? We would say absolutely. Is a better outcome for a client financial security? We would say absolutely. Is a better outcome having an advisor or an advisory team that helps you and makes your life easier with your financial, emotional, planning related issues? Absolutely. So I think that is part of what I'm trying to express here. It's proof points. So I think as we go beyond 2021 and into the future, we've certainly seen the financial proof points. It's out there. Multiples are expanding in the RIA profession. Newsflash, if you didn't hear that. I think as we go forward, we need to see more proof points.
I think that's really helpful, you know, theme of that. One, a couple of things I've been hearing from you through our discussion here is that there are benefits to scale where we're seeing some of the elements like you were talking about, like the theme-based investment strategies or the expansion into areas like crypto or alternatives to a greater degree, or trying to adapt to different generations. I mean, on the one hand, you're mentioning the millennials, and on the other hand, you're talking about the centenarians out there. And that's increasingly complex for firms to execute on. So it's about, we used to call it, you know, moving up the advice value stack here at Fidelity. And I think that you really outlined a number of those capabilities. So as we wrap up, are there any other things that you would like our audience to think about as they begin to move into 2022 and what we're going to be seeing ahead and how to think about M&A as a strategy?
Yeah, I mean, M&A starts with having a sound business across the board. So I guess I'd have three quick pieces of advice. Maybe four. Sorry. I'm a numbers guy. What can I tell you? Number one, just like you always say, have a clear strategy of where you fit in this paradigm. Are you a buyer? Are you a seller? Are you a niche player? And, you know, I think due to some of your good work, I think firms have actually focused on that in their strategy. Number two, whether you're a buyer, a seller, or a niche player, probably take a refreshed look at your practice management propositions. So all of the things that you listed around ESG, alts, digital assets, and so forth, those are practice management decisions. And how can you differentiate yourself? I just want to clarify, when I talk about digital assets, I'm not saying digital assets are an asset class that advisors should rush to, but there is a practice management element because we know your investors are investing in that space. So how do you incorporate into your evaluation your chance to actually look after assets that you aren't today? And then third, you know, think about the future. You can't do all of these things at once, but you know, where are you going to focus as you think of your firm strategy? And then the fourth thing is, you know, understand tail risk. You know, what are those? I'd love to say, Scott, you know, what are the known unknowns and what are the unknown unknowns? And think about those and how they can impact your business.
Well, those are great points to consider going forward. And remember that the title of this whole podcast series is Future Ready through M&A. And that's what we're trying to do is help our audience to consider how this, not just what's going on, but why it's going on and how they should consider some of the options going forward.
I think it's also a good time for advisors, for firm owners, for platform operators, for M&A participants, for you and I, all the listeners to this podcast, to look for those weak signals. So in 2009, the emergence of a digital asset called Bitcoin was a very, very weak signal. And look at it today. So what are the weak signals today that are going to be the major trends of tomorrow?
I think that's tremendous because I think that's true in any innovative industry that you're looking around the corner, as I've heard you say, for what's coming next and what is going to be the impact for clients and what are clients going to expect so that we come back to this whole theme of really delivering a better outcome for clients and trying to help our firms to be able to do that. Well, David, I want to thank you for spending the time with us today and giving us some observations on both the activity that we're seeing and, more importantly, what's being built out there and what do these larger enterprises mean and where's the future and some of the elements that each firm should be considering how they're going to respond to some of those needs. This has been really exciting, and I just want to thank you for the time with us.
Well, thank you, Scott and team, and thanks for having me, and always a pleasure. Hope to be invited back sometime.
As a reminder, if you haven't listened to Season 1 or Season 2 yet, you can visit go.fidelity.com/mergers and acquisitions, or you can find us on Apple Podcasts to catch up on past episodes. And I do encourage you to listen to some of these leaders who bring great insights on their perspectives on building these businesses. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast to get the latest M&A insights and to hear from firms like yours who have gone through a transaction. Find out what they've learned, what they'd never do again, and how they've grown as a result of the transaction. Well, that's it for us today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Future Ready Through M&A. I'm Scott Slater, reminding you to be future ready.
Research citations. 1. Fidelity November 2021 Wealth Management M&A Transaction Report. Several sources are used to create this report. M&A data is gathered from press releases, trade articles, and other secondary research sources. All publicly announced transactions involving the acquisition of an independent advisory firm are reviewed for inclusion. This data covers the period from January 1, 2021 to November 30, 2021. The acquire models referenced herein are for illustrative purposes only and are not meant to be exhaustive of all business options or models a wealth management firm may consider for its particular situation. The included information is not intended to illustrate any specific wealth management firm experience. 2. Investor Advisor Industry Snapshot 2021, Evolution, Revolution, Reimagined. Second edition, July 2021, published by Investment Advisor Association and National Regulatory Services. For investment professional use. Information provided in this document is for informational and educational purposes only. To the extent any investment information in this material is deemed to be a recommendation, it is not meant to be impartial investment advice or advice in a fiduciary capacity, and is not intended to be used as a primary basis for you or your client's investment decisions. Fidelity and its representatives may have a conflict of interest in the products or services mentioned in this material because they have a financial interest in them and receive compensation, directly or indirectly, in connection with the management, distribution, and/or servicing of these products or services, including Fidelity funds, certain third-party funds and products, and certain investment services. Third-party marks are the property of their representative owners. All other marks are the property of FMR LLC. Fidelity Institutional provides investment products through Fidelity Distributors Company LLC, clearing, custody, or other brokerage services through National Financial Services LLC, or Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, members NYSE SIPC. Personal and workplace investment products are provided by Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, member NYSE SIPC. Copyright 2022 FMR LLC, all rights reserved. 101140.1.0 1.9904806.100